Welcome to the Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Will Payne. Will is a first-year student in our Executive MBA class of 2022, and he and I recently connected via Zoom to talk more about his background, how he decided to pursue an MBA, what led him to Darden, and how he is navigating the first-year curriculum. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Will Payne. Will, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Brett, for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here. You're calling from Bristol, Virginia?
Absolutely. Birthplace of country music. And Bristol's been my home just for about a year and a half and coming from Richmond. So it's, you know, of course, I've been here. I've been all around the state through kind of political travels, but it's been, you know, with my work now, the best decision I've ever made.
Well, that's great. Bristol, of course, it's got two states come together right there. There's a Tennessee side, right, and a Virginia side.
Well, I look outside my window, and I'm on State Street, so I look right across the street at Tennessee, and you know, there are different restrictions. And during COVID, it really kind of it was pretty interesting. You know, Tennessee really didn't shut down much, but you know, restaurants, there are bars across the street, and in Virginia, of course, you have to have food. So there's some real differences there.
That is totally fascinating. How are you doing right now, by the way? You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm actually doing pretty good. I mean, I think if this pandemic has taught us anything about human nature, it's that, you know, resilience will ultimately win the day. You know, I miss parties, I miss concerts, miss movies, miss traveling without any, you know, care in the world. But you know, none of that really matters. I have no business complaining. People are sick and people are dying. And you know, I know some folks who've had COVID. I know someone who's died as a result of it. You know, it's really surreal. But the best thing we can do is look out for everyone's best interests. You know, follow the rules, get vaccinated. And for our sanity, we've got to be creative about, you know, connecting with friends and family and coworkers. But it takes a lot more effort to do that these days.
Yeah, I was wondering, have you picked up any hobbies, anything that you've been enjoying as you maybe had a little bit more downtime here?
It's been tough. I'm trying to, I've been trying to teach myself for the last year and a half to play the electric bass. You know, I love music, and I love music, and I love going to concerts and listening to music, and really drives a lot of my work and creativity. But it's I found it very hard with class to try to find those, you know, an hour or 2 hours a day to practice. But I'm committed. Eventually, I mean, my goal long-term, and I've always wanted to do this, but if I can get just good enough so I can play in a cover band, and whether it's an 80s rock, you know, the first choice or 90s grunge, at some point I'm going to get there. But probably after Darden.
That's all right. You can sort of workshop at Woodshed right now, you know, practice when you can, and then like a butterfly emerging from the cocoon, you will launch
right.
your early 90s grunge cover band post-Darden. Any bass heroes, bassists that you look up to or that you try to emulate in your style?
Yeah, I mean, so Guns N' Roses, I'll never reach there, but Duff McKagan, Guns N' Roses, incredible. And actually I got, I love his bass, his signature bass is this beautiful pearl white. So I got one, or the version that you can buy from Fender. And that's my baby. It's a lot of fun to play that. And it is absolutely 80s.
So Will, thanks for being here and, want to, sort of learn a little bit more about you and your background before we get into your Darden journey. So tell us a little bit more about what you did before coming to Darden and what you're doing right now.
Yeah. You've had a few folks on the podcast, Brett, like me, who've come from a political background and have made a transition to business. And I think Mike Doerr and Zach Golden in particular, if you're successful in politics, it means you can either raise a lot of money, or maybe this is an and, or you can sell a vision, an idea or a candidate. You know, you hear no a lot, but you keep going and you fall down and you get back up, and it's not for everyone. And I've worked on maybe 15 campaigns in, I don't know, about 17 years. You know, I lost the first two. I hated that feeling because, you know, you put everything into it. You work nonstop, days, nights, weekends, holidays. It all comes down to who had a better plan and stronger execution. And a lot of that's out of your control. And after those two losses, I was determined, you know, to never lose again. You know, easier said than done. But in my case in politics, I haven't. And that's even, you know, working on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, I'm living proof that you can do that successfully. So in my point, you know, politics has given me everything. You know, Senator Mark Warner, you know, we built the largest bipartisan coalition, you know, in Virginia history. And that experience kind of, I felt compelled to write his biography. And I call that, you know, like the VH1 Behind the Music story. You know, someone who co-founded Nextel, was the country's first or the world's first cellular broker, you know, and then of course, former Virginia governor. And then, you know, helping, you know, Governor Terry McAuliffe, after he got elected, he gave me the opportunity to serve my alma mater. And, you know, 6 years later, as a member of William Mary's Board of Visitors, you know, I'm vice rector and I'm chair of Buildings and Grounds. And I've learned more about leadership and the consequences of, you know, decision-making than I ever could have imagined. And I really credit the board colleagues who, you know, are from the business world in particular for taking me under their wing. And so, you know, being able to give back to an institution has given me so much. I mean, that's an honor. It's the most meaningful thing, you know, I've done. But, you know, politics kind of leading me every step of the way here to kind of what I'm doing now. And that kind of, my move from Richmond to Bristol, was, you know, based on my work with Governor Northam's administration, and now focused here in economic development, for, you know, a 16 county and city area, pretty big geographical area, but still an area that has more cattle than people.
So Bristol, for our listeners, so that gives a little bit of the landscape. It's not densely populated. It's an agricultural place. And you work on sort of thinking about sort of development opportunities here and bringing development to the area. I mean, how do you approach something like that? That seems very big, very ambiguous. You know, how do you orient to it?
It is. And I, you know, we kind of started with a blank slate. You know, I call my shop Coalfield Strategies a one-stop shop, economic development firm, because, you know, we're trying to drive new investment, new jobs to Southwest Virginia. And these are jobs or expansion projects that are coming from outside Virginia, you know, today. So we had to start with a vision. And so we call that, you know, invest Southwest Virginia, invest SWVA. We feel it's really important to have a vision and different measurable goals that we all should, you know, work toward, aspire to. But that initiative was born out of the region's senior legislators' desire to pilot whether a private firm like ours could step in and disrupt, you know, ways of old. They have seen, you know, efforts tried year after year, but let's try something new. And as we know, you know, modern operation requires an aggressive lead generation strategy, and it's got to be held accountable. So as a private outfit, unlike a traditional kind of government run economic development operation, if we don't deliver, then we're fired. But, you know, I'm fine with that. We thrive on that, you know, that pressure to deliver. And we don't want to do what everyone else is doing. Instead, we want to focus on what no one else is doing. You know, complicated, time-consuming projects, energy, renewable energy, and agriculture in particular, that require leveraging new relationships and, you know, operating, you know, at the speed of business.
So one of the things I know just from following your emails to your classmates that you've been working on is this sort of grain initiative connected to sort of the craft beer explosion in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Just, it feels like nationwide, but particularly in Virginia, there's lots of local breweries, some of them even in the Charlottesville metro area.
Absolutely. We, you know, this project, and, you know, we call this like Project Calypso. It's a growing project, and we have a related one that's going to be building a grain terminal. There's not a grain terminal, a grain processing, you know, facility in the region today. That's a major disadvantage. We had to bring our grain to Louisville and also Indiana. Well, that's, you know, if the goal is to reduce food miles, you know, that doesn't help us. So for us, you know, instead of, you know, we saw an opportunity and instead of waiting for someone else to capitalize on it, we said, we're going to put in our own money and we're going to go after creating this new market for specialty grain. Southwest Virginia, of course, has an incredible legacy of small grains, corn, tobacco, but not specialty grains. And for us, you know, thinking about the farmers, you know, these are, you know, small business owners, you know, in Virginia's small, original small business owners, you know, bottom line, what we want to do is put more money in their pockets, give them a cash crop opportunity in the winter when they maybe wouldn't be growing anything, and help support, you know, creating this next generation of farmers who may identify with being part of, you know, this craft beverage industry. But we had to prove that concept. And so we found willing farmers who wanted to try this out, and we contracted with them. We worked with Virginia Tech on the right seed and the right, right way to grow this, maybe differently from growing feed quality barley, but, you know, found a maltster in Asheville, North Carolina, and they were willing to kind of get on board with this project. But you know, as a result, you know, despite all the rain we had last year, all of our grain specked out. And it was so exciting to see something go from an idea to, you know, the seed in the ground to now you can drink this beer. And so we had about 18,000 pounds of this malt that we gave out to about 18 breweries all around Virginia. But a Charlottesville brewery, as you said, Three Notched, made this special Appalachian ale. Just so proud of working with these breweries that do care so much about, you know, buying local, buying Virginia, and wanting to support, you know, our small family farms.
It's got to be incredible to see the impact that you're having on the local community and sort of the broader ecosystem there in Bristol. I mean, you know, so oftentimes I think people are like, you know, how am I making a difference in the world? And you probably tangibly can see that and feel that.
We can see that every day, and that's what's really exciting. You know, projects, you know, in this industry, and you know, you projects take years sometimes. And for us, we don't have that luxury because we're being judged by our results and immediate results. And we need to deliver quick wins. So for us, it's very important about, you know, focusing on projects where there are, you know, long-term benefits, of course, that's our goal, but we've got to have short-term wins. And this is a project where you can drink, you know, our progress right now. And we had, what's really exciting, a brewery in Williamsburg made a beer right before Election Day called I Voted Today. And they've exported that to Tokyo. And so we were really excited to find someone who could take a photo of folks drinking this beer in downtown Tokyo. And that's another first, right? I mean, this region needs, you know, there are many people that we're working with. They want, you know, to believe in this vision for reinventing the region. And that's what we're trying to offer. And they just need some direction. And we're trying to offer that. And together, we're going to, you know, reinvent a region that was normally has been, you know, dependent on coal for so long, and now can, you know, as we're trying to do, take those coal assets and how do we focus on renewable energy using those coal assets and the strength of this workforce, committed workforce who are able to do the job better than others. So I'm so proud of this work. It has been an incredible opportunity. It's been the most meaningful, you know, I hate to call it a job, but it really is. It's a passion at this point.
So you shared your story, you know, political background, you worked on campaigns, you worked closely with governors of Virginia, and you're on the board of visitors at William & Mary, and now you're doing economic development. I mean, what brought you to thinking about an MBA? I can understand the utility of an MBA given the work that you're currently doing, but I wonder, you know, how long did you think about this step and what convinced you that this was what you needed to do?
Yeah, it's, for me, it's all about transformation. You know, I'm 43 years old. I'm 42 years old. I don't even know how old I am. 42 years old, and you know, I'm back in the classroom after two decades. That's a little scary, but for me, you know, the MBA is an important credential. So I'm pitching CEOs every day. This MBA is about building credibility with those C-suite executives and developing, you know, a knowledge base. I need to understand their goals. I need to put myself in their shoes and master the financial considerations the business is looking at when exploring expanding its operations. In the case of Southwest Virginia, where I am, they're expanding into an unfamiliar area in most cases. And so I have to earn their trust. They have to buy into my team and me before they even begin to understand what this region can offer them in terms of growth. And so, you know, that's where the communication skills that we're equally focused on in this MBA program come into play, as much as the dreaded other work where that has plagued me a little bit for the last 5 months.
So the quantitative work.
Absolutely, yes.
So tell us more about that. Many of our students do not come from traditional business backgrounds in terms of academic setting, if not had prior exposure to finance and accounting. Is that your story too?
Absolutely. So a year ago, almost to the day, I came to Sands Family Grounds for a class visit. It was Shane Nicoli's Accounting 2 course, and I'm currently knee deep in that right now in Q3. I don't have a quantitative background, period. And it was my biggest fear in applying. I didn't have a great experience in college in economics. So I questioned whether I could survive even, you know, 2 decades later. But that visit was really important. That visit to Shane's class only strengthened my resolve to come to Darden. You know, I walked out of there thinking to myself, you know, I can do this. And I will say that this quarter is difficult, but it's manageable. We're fresh off a 2-week holiday break. I think we're a little compressed maybe in this quarter. And I can't tell you how much I needed that break, by the way. It was fantastic. But we're, you know, we're 5 months into this program and I've done better than I thought I ever could. And I know I've blown away my college GPA. And while that doesn't matter to me, the GPA really, right? It doesn't matter in a business school. It's really heartening to know that, you know, with age and experience, that I'm the student today that I always kind of wanted to be 20 years ago.
I appreciate that last point. Because I talk with so many prospective students, you know, who are coming back to school after some time away. You know, that's one of the challenges, using those muscles again, getting back into school mode. But they see it as a second chance to dance, so to speak. You know, you're coming back, new energy, new opportunity, a chance to write a different story for yourself in an academic environment.
Absolutely. And that's where this program really excels and has allowed me to kind of gain, you know, confidence in my abilities and kind of build off of, you know, a lot of work experience, expertise, you know, that I've developed that now I can bring in as a tool to help me, you know, in the classroom with, you know, topics that are, you know, were unfamiliar to me before.
Yeah. Talk about, you know, how are your classmates helpful to you, or, you know, how are you getting up to speed on things that you don't have a lot of deep personal background with?
Yeah. I think there are 3 points that really kind of resonate with me. You know, and that kind of goes to the impact of this program. The first is having more confidence in yourself. You know, there's no longer a fear of being called on in class. I don't have it anymore. I did absolutely on day one, and then probably for the first, you know, 3 months. So if you don't know the answer, you know, admit it. You pass the ball to someone else, and don't sweat it, because life goes on. You know, you shouldn't feel embarrassed. We're all in this together, and then that's been really exciting. You know, we had you know, a lot of interaction over the kind of spring and summer as folks were being admitted, and so I think, you know, many of classmates have said before, I mean, that our class kind of came in more connected than many classes are typically after, you know, the first few months. And that's really true. You know, and I think that with this program, you're bombarded with so much information. It's coming at you from every direction. And so there's never enough time in the day to do what you need to do. And if you focus on everything you have to do, it's overwhelming and it may defeat you. And so you have to learn how to filter information and prioritize tasks. I've been able to master the skill of dealing with what is exactly in front of me and taking things 1 month at a time, 1 week at a time, 1 day at a time. And that's not how I normally operate. And I normally need to kind of think farther out, but out of necessity, that's how I have to operate. And that's a incredible strength. I would say this program has helped me you know, focus on. But, you know, to your question, really, you know, leaning on, you know, my support group. And in that case, that's my learning team. They're my rock. You know, I'm not exaggerating when I say this, that I probably wouldn't be here after 5 months without my team. You know, John Beckerle, Ann Lowe, Pradmy Alenka, and Stephen Odell, and others outside the team who've been very helpful and supportive and kind of share some of the entrepreneurial pursuits that I've got. They bring so much perspective, you know, on our coursework, into our discussions and into the classroom. Together, we prep for class, we laugh, like we almost cry, you know, we keep each other motivated and focused. And that's part of Darden's secret sauce.
So when you think back, I mean, where you were when you started the program to where you are now, it sounds like the program's had an impact for you in terms of confidence, in terms of being able to sort of relentlessly prioritize what's most important right now. Are there other sort of areas of growth that you've seen for yourself? Or, you know, do you feel like you've transformed even in this short period of time?
I see it with my work. I mean, I see it every day right now. I know that my confidence matters when you're trying to sell. What I'm trying to do is sell a region, sell an idea here. I'm much more polished. I have my story down, my personal story down. It's something that we focused on for about 3 months. We talked about telling our story. And that's pretty critical in my case, especially as I have to earn trust from folks outside of Virginia. I think going back to the previous question, while classwork and being bombarded with information from classwork, I'm getting it every day under COVID, and I've never worked harder or longer in my life than the last 9-10 months since the pandemic really hit Virginia. Our work only just got more complicated, and much more complicated, much more difficult because I couldn't travel like I needed to travel to see people in person. And so we had to be a lot more creative about how we're trying to tell this story. And that takes a lot more work. And so I think this program has really kind of opened me to understanding how to pivot and how to be more creative about getting your point across.
When you think about those communication skills, my mind comes to the case method and what happens in class. Someone who hasn't had the same opportunity to say sit in a live class, we're doing mock classes now, but what would you share with someone? What's the case method like from a student perspective? How would you describe that experience?
Oh yeah. So, and it's really been interesting, whether it's, decision analysis or leadership communications or, global economics, the case method works in every class. So the opportunity first to kind of, just like my go-to books are biographies and autobiographies, I love to learn from people's stories. I love to spend time with people and learning about kind of what makes them operate and how they make decisions. So the case method is perfect for me to see a problem and kind of try to work through, to a solution. And for us, some of these cases are pretty detailed. What matters most is, the faculty do a great job of trying to include as many of our classmates as possible in this discussion. And in a virtual environment, as you know, when you have 75 people on our, when we're not on grounds, that seems impossible, but it works. But you've got to come prepared. So you need to read the case. You need to kind of understand the background, but you don't have to go out of your way to kind of learn about other information that's not in the case. The point is to kind of look at the information that's in front of you and see if you can interpret that. But that case method and the back and forth with classmates really helps us, try to answer some of the questions that are posed there.
So, Will, what are you looking forward to in the months ahead in the program? You're somebody, when I think about the conversations that we've had, you have a lot of interest, you have a lot going on, ambitious person, you got a big goals out there that you're working towards. What are you excited about?
Yeah, three things. First, I've got travel. This is my first time flying in about 2 weeks since the pandemic hit. So, but I'm I'm going out west. I got to go to the Northeast and then around Virginia. I'm also in the Gemba. So I have 4 trips planned before graduation: Argentina, Finland, Germany, and Cuba. I have no doubt those are going to be amazing, and I really can't wait to do those trips. But for me, most importantly, concert season. You know, I'm very optimistic, and Motley Crue is coming out of retirement with an epic lineup with Def Leppard, Poison, and Joan Jett, and Rage Against the Machine is back together. And then, of course, the long-awaited reunion is happening with Genesis, with the original members, you know, Phil Collins, Mike Rutherford, and Tony Banks. So so 3 years ago, I flew to Dublin to see Phil Collins. It was his own comeback tour. And I think it was called Not Dead Yet, based on the autobiography he just released. It was incredible. And that's what I miss most, going to these live shows, but that's what I'm looking forward to when we can crawl out of this, you know, this mess.
What would be your advice for folks who work in sort of political or policy sphere about why an MBA? This is a conversation we've had many times here on this podcast. As you know, you referenced a couple of the episodes we've done on this sort of theme with Mike and Zach, both from kind of political world prior to coming to Darden. I wonder, you know, what you might share for people who come from that policy background.
Yeah, I can't tell you how powerful it is to be back in the classroom and to spend time getting to know, you know, my classmates. Brett, you've done such a great job in bringing people together with diverse backgrounds and perspectives, you know, together. That matters so much. And for, you know, prospective students, I hope they can grasp how critical the relationship building aspect is to the Darden program. And it's just as important as the knowledge they'll gain with, you know, with the program in class. And that's why I'm here. But, you know, all of my work, from politics, you know, to now, it's been about relationships. I wouldn't be here today without them. I've been supported by so many folks along the way and have nurtured relationships as well. And that's what this class is doing. That's what this program is doing. We've got an incredible, you know, knowledge base here and people we can tap to work with and support our own interests moving forward. Developing those relationships is absolutely critical. And in spite of COVID, forget COVID, right? We're doing it regardless. It's just different. You got to work harder doing it, but we're still doing it. So if anyone is really focused on that, that's why this program really matters.
Yeah, I was going to ask you your sort of general why Darden pitch. I imagine it probably does start with the people first.
Absolutely. And not just the, you know, my classmates, but, you know, the faculty, the program team, since day one, since visiting, right, since talking to you, I felt at home. You kind of get that sense right away, you know, is this a place for me or not? And the focus on people, and as you talked about before, kind of your, you know, focus on a mission or passion or your why, right? That matters. And you can still be in business and still focus on doing good in the world. And you can do it together with other people.
Well, I think about what you just said there and how that does seem to directly intersect with what Darden is about. You know, we've talked here on the podcast about the emphasis on stakeholder theory and thinking about the way the many impacts that business decisions have and all the people affected by those decisions, that sort of outlook. And again, business as a force for good, that seems directly related to the work that you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a place here where, you know, we have government, business, and the private sector really is important, and the community organizations, and we've got to bring so many people together. And if one group or in some of our projects, if one person falls out, the project dies. And so we are all so focused on, you know, that being a priority that we really, you know, pick teams, value added folks, and really spend the time to support each other, because we can't do this unless we all, you know, work together.
So Will, when I think about what you just described, this idea of like changing people's lives, you know, economic redevelopment, you know, trying to keep you know, talent in a place that seems inherently bipartisan to me. I don't know. It might be a bit of a naive worldview, but to me, it feels like that's something that everybody can get behind.
No, you're right. It is bipartisan, and you have to. I think both sides need to understand that each other. I think we all have the same goal, right? Maybe we just say it in different ways, and that's why the communication of these goals is so important. But for us, it's really kind of leading with projects instead of leading with rhetoric. And having results that prove that we aren't just all talk here, that we want to deliver, results and prove that what we're saying is really going to be helpful long term for our community. And that's where, politics needs to kind of that blend there with politics and the private sector. And that's why I really say I'm trying to bring in that mindset is so important. And I think often lost, even with politicians who come from a business background. And that's what we're trying to do. We've got to bring together all these different groups and we're all probably saying the same thing. We just need to understand each other better. And that just takes more communication.
Well, I'm going to come back to something that one of our alums said on one of these podcasts and talked about the ability to be a translator. Someone from a policy background, getting an MBA, you now can speak to policy people and to business people. Do you feel like your Darden experience has allowed you to kind of, again, understand all these different stakeholders?
Absolutely. That's what's, I think required in business and business translators here. And I think having that, for me, having a liberal arts background and focus on, communicating, writing, speaking, is essential. And I think that's what employers, when we talk to them every day, they need talent that recognizes that as a skill. That's a skill that's going to help you rise in a company or help you develop your own idea and be an entrepreneur. But that's where the value of an MBA, but in this case, really with Darden's focus on people and focusing on, being as focused on quantitative side and problem solving as you are on, delivery of message and being able to bring people together.
So we asked the same last question of our guests here on the podcast. I wonder, do you have any advice for our prospective student listeners? Anything that you would share with them?
Yeah. Take every, moment you have free, and we're limited these days, to get to know your classmates. They're going to support you through not just the challenges you have in the program and understanding content but they're going to be your rock. You got to lean on them and they're going to want to lean on you. And so those relationships are so important and are going to help you get through this 20-month adventure. But there's relationships that you're going to have hopefully for the rest of your life.
One of my favorite tips is as soon as you know you're coming to Darden, start that work, right? Come to the virtual meetups, take time to get to know your classmates. If there's a WhatsApp group, join it. If there's a Slack channel, be there. If there's a Facebook group, do that too. We have a LinkedIn group. Take advantage of all of this because, you'll learn a ton, certainly. You'll carry that with you into your career, but the relationships, that's real sticky. Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk Tears for Fears here on this podcast. It's been such a pleasure having this time with you. It's not every day that I get to do that. And it's great to hear that you're doing well, exciting about all the projects that you're working on there in Southwest Virginia. Glad to hear the program is going well, all of these fantastic things for you. And thank you as always for taking time out for the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And that was my interview with Will Payne, a first year student in our Executive MBA class of 2022. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's EXEC, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.